Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The UN Security Council has considered a condemnation of North Korea's missile tests of Wednesday, one of which landed inside waters that are part of Japan's exclusive economic zone. Coral Besho is Japan's UN ambassador.
This is a totally unacceptable action on the part of DPRK. The missile launched landed within the Japan's EEZ, exclusive economic zone.
He appealed to the Council for Unity and urged it to send a strong message to Pyongyang and expressed hope the Council would act soon. U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power said there were strong condemnations from across the board among all 15 Council members. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The United States continues to believe that our response to North Korea's destabilizing activities is stronger when the international community remains united.
He said the U.S. is not only reaching out to its allies, but other countries like Russia and China to convince them such missile tests are destabilizing. South Africa's ruling African National Congress has reportedly taken an early lead as vote counting from municipal elections goes on. Pre-election polling suggested the ANC, plagued by a weak economy and allegations of scandal, could be in political jeopardy in local governments such as Pretoria and Johannesburg. Anglican Archbishop Desmond Tutu cast his ballot Wednesday.
It is a dream to know that one can vote in South Africa as a black person. It's fantastic, and I hope everybody will want to use their vote in the right way.
With 5% of the vote tabulated, the ANC held 54% of the ballots to the opposition Democratic Alliance's 33%. This is VOA News. The fight over the Syrian city of Aleppo continues to rage as government-allied forces backed by Russian warplanes push back against a new rebel offensive that was launched Sunday. Meanwhile, the U.S.-based Physicians for Human Rights said Wednesday in the past week, government forces conducted airstrikes that hit six hospitals in the Aleppo area, amounting to what they called war crimes. The Russian Defense Ministry, meanwhile, accused rebels of using a toxic agent against civilians in Aleppo, killing seven, sickening more than 20. A Russian general did not identify the agent, but said victims suffocated or suffered lung burns. The U.S. military has completed its initial assessment of a July 28 airstrike in Syria that allegedly killed civilians in the fight against Islamic State for the northwest town of Manbij. Colonel Chris Garver is a Pentagon spokesman in Iraq.
This incident has been found to be credible enough to warrant a formal investigation, which is underway.
A separate investigation is underway involving a July 19th U.S. airstrike. Garver said between 10 and 73 civilians may have been killed. The White House said a $400 million payment to Iran at about the time that five Americans were released from detention was not a ransom. White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
What I will say is that the United States, under President Obama, has not paid a ransom to secure the release of Americans unjustly detained in Iran, and we're not going to pay a ransom. If there are Americans who are unjustly detained in Iran, we will make a case regularly through some now established channels with Iran to advocate for their release.
The five Americans were freed in January in exchange for seven Iranians held in the U.S. The prisoner swap coincided with the lifting of international sanctions over the Iran nuclear deal. The payment was to partially settle a decades-old dispute over an aborted arms deal. With the 2016 Summer Olympic Games officially to get underway Friday, the competition is actually already underway. Women's footballers played, with Brazil beating China 3-0 in Rio de Janeiro. Sweden defeated South Africa 1-0. Canada bested Australia 2-0. There were six women's matches in all Wednesday, with eight men's matches slated to be played Thursday. Wednesday, the Court of Arbitration for Sport announced there would be no Russian weightlifters at the Olympic Games after rejecting the country's appeal against a ban imposed by the sport's governing body over doping violations. Meanwhile, the Olympic torch arrived by boat in Rio Wednesday as part of its 90-day relay around the country. The Burundian government has rejected the proposed deployment of up to 228 UN police to monitor human rights abuses and bring calm to a country beset by political violence. A government spokesman said Burundi's security forces are in control of the East African country. Sending a foreign force without prior consultation would violate the sovereignty. Nigeria's Boko Haram insurgency named a new leader. Abu Musab al-Barnawi was named as its governor for West Africa in an interview in the group's newspaper. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United States will continue to be a strong partner of Africa.
But as you're watching our election, I want you to know that one of the things that leaders in Washington agree on both sides of the political aisle, Republicans and Democrats, is the importance of a strong American partnership with the nations and peoples of Africa.
Vice President Barack Obama addressing a town hall yesterday in Washington with young African leaders. President Edgar Lungu calls for an end to violence exactly a week before Zambia's presidential election. Zimbabwe police break up anti-Mugabe protest, and a UN human rights official calls for accountability and an end to impunity in South Sudan.
There is no military solution to this conflict. The fighting must stop and the atrocities must end immediately. I call on all armed actors to immediately silence the guns, end the culture of impunity, and allow civilians to live in peace.
Stephen O'Brien is the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs. Nigeria's Shiite community may appeal a report on arming killings, and Australia is accused of refugee abuse. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama has told young African leaders that in spite of the rough and tumble of the current U.S. presidential campaign, the United States will always be a strong partner of Africa, no matter who is elected. Mr. Obama spoke Wednesday in Washington as he addressed a town hall of the 2016 Young African Leaders Initiative. Mr. Obama launched the program in 2010 to support an emerging generation of African leaders as they work to drive economic growth, enhance democratic governance, and strengthen civil society structures in Africa.
Not only have you been studying and learning, but you've also immersed yourself in American culture. You've looked at sites from our nation's founding in Boston and Philadelphia. You've visited the 9/11 Memorial in New York. You've spent time in my hometown of Chicago. So you've got a taste of America. You've also gotten a front row seat on the fascinating roller coaster process of American democracy, because you're here during election season, and I hope you've buckled your seatbelts. But it actually has been a good lesson and a reminder: democracy is hard everywhere, even in the world's oldest continuous democracy. It's always challenging, and it is always messy. But as you're watching our election, I want you to know that one of the things that leaders in Washington agree on both sides of the political aisle, Republicans and Democrats, is the importance of a strong American partnership with the nations and peoples of Africa. That's true today. I'm confident it'll be true for years to come. So we're going to keep standing with you.
During a question and answer period, a young woman from Sudan asked President Obama about U.S. sanctions on her country and how the U.S. can help empower young people to strengthen democracy in Sudan.
Our goal when we put together a package of sanctions is not to punish the people of that country, but is rather to make sure that we can exert some leverage so that the country is more responsive to the needs of the people, that they are more prepared to open up government to peaceful concerns and people who are trying to organize around human rights or democracy or so forth. The pressure that we apply is not always enough to actually entirely change the practices inside those countries. And sometimes, let's face it, there are countries that are very resentful and suggest, why don't you mind your own business, right? Their attitude is, who is America to tell us what to do when you yourselves have your own problems inside your country? And my response is that America has to have some humility in recognizing that we have our own issues, that ultimately, whether it's people in Cuba or people in Sudan or people in other parts of the world where there are challenges around human rights, that ultimately it's going to be up to the people themselves in those countries to determine their fate. But I do believe that there are certain principles that apply everywhere. I believe that governments should follow the law and not be arbitrary. I believe that every individual has certain rights to speak freely and to practice their own faith freely and to assemble peacefully to petition their government. I believe that women should be treated equally. And if you come from a country in which it is traditional to beat women or not give them an education or engage in genital mutilation, then you should change your traditions because those are bad practices.
U.S. President Barack Obama addressing a town hall yesterday in Washington of the Young African Leaders Initiative. Since its founding, more than 250,000 people have joined the Young African Leaders Initiative. The UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator, Stephen O'Brien, says humanitarian conditions have deteriorated significantly in South Sudan, including in places where things were relatively calm last year. O'Brien also condemned recent reports of sexual violence against women and girls in Juba. Tito Justin prepared this report from Juba, as narrated by Ayan Bio.
UN Humanitarian Chief Stephen O'Brien traveled to South Sudan this week to see firsthand the humanitarian conditions following the outbreak of fighting early last month in the capital, Juba, which quickly spread to other parts of the country. After meeting with President Salva Kiir, O'Brien told reporters in Juba that the president assured him UN workers would have unhindered humanitarian access to every community in the country. In the past, UN workers say they've been denied access to several remote areas of the country by forces loyal to the president, as well as those who support Riek Machar. During his three-day tour of South Sudan, which included stops in Wau and Awil, O'Brien says he was shocked to hear reports of sexual violence carried out by government soldiers. O'Brien says he also reiterated to Mr. Kiir the need for free, unfettered access to all people in need.
Wherever they may be, and for humanitarian workers and their assets to be treated with respect. Humanitarian workers are saving lives while risking their own, and I am appalled that they continue to be harassed, targeted, and even killed.
O'Brien says the number of humanitarian workers killed since 2013 in South Sudan has risen from 27 last year to 57 this year, adding that many are still missing. He condemned the killing and harassing of aid workers and called on President Kiir to take immediate action to end the culture of impunity in South Sudan.
There must be an end to impunity. We must make sure that the evidence is gathered, that the information is shared with appropriate authorities, both within South Sudan as well as amongst the relevant people in the international community.
The top UN diplomat says people in South Sudan are not just fleeing their homes because they need food or shelter, but because they fear for their lives.
There is no military solution to this conflict. The fighting must stop and the atrocities must end immediately. I call on all armed actors to immediately silence the guns, end the culture of impunity, and allow civilians to live in peace.
O'Brien says humanitarian aid workers have reached more than 2.8 million people who need protection and assistance across the country. Since the conflict erupted in December 2013, more than 2 million people fled their homes. O'Brien says some 1.6 million people are displaced inside South Sudan, and more than 900,000 others have fled to neighboring countries. The UN says more than 60,000 South Sudanese crossed the border into Uganda following last month's fighting in Juba. O'Brien says some 4.8 million people and 250,000 children are severely malnourished. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 4th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Zambian President Edgar Lungu says he is ready to use draconian means to ensure the country remains peaceful after next week's presidential elections. Mr. Lungu, from the ruling Patriotic Front Party, says he has intelligence that members of the main opposition United Party for National Development, the UPND, plan to cause havoc if their party does not win the election. But Canisius Banda, deputy leader of the UPND, tells reporter Peter Clotty that President Lungu's statement is unfortunate and regrettable.
President Lungu is speaking out of turn. going the draconian way, by its very definition, is breaching peace. There is peace in this country at the moment, relative peace, and the president just has to uphold the constitution that he sought to uphold on his inauguration. There is no provision in the Republican constitution for him to begin to be illegal and to go the draconian way as he says. He's got all the instruments of power, and violence is not coming from any opposition political party. All these political parties are just defending themselves. It's not uncommon, Peter, when you're defending yourself, when you've been aggressed, it is not uncommon for you to be violent as well. The genesis of it is the PF, the ruling party. That's where it's coming from. And its origins, we understand the origins. The PF are afraid. You know, they have looted this country, they have wrecked the economy, they have pocketed money through overpricing of government projects and all sorts of things. So they are very, very scared that if they lost power, then maybe Hichilema's group would cut off their necks.
Now, let me ask you this, Dr. Canisius Banda. The president said he has intelligence that the UPND is planning to cause havoc if they lose the election. Is this what the UPND has planned? Because he says he has intelligence to that effect.
No, Peter, I don't know what the hell President Lungu is talking about. He's got his intelligence. But you see, the word intelligence can be bandied around to commit crimes, you know, to breach the peace, to incarcerate people illegally, and persecute citizens. You know, anybody can come and say, I have intelligence. All we are calling for are free and fair elections. Look, if elections are free and fair, last year we had a presidential election which wasn't free and fair. So we want this particular election, all of them, you know, local government, parliament, mayoral elections, as well as presidential, they must be free and fair. And if they are free and fair, even if President Lungu won, we would hold our peace. We would say, hey, look, democracy has prevailed.
But Dr. Canisius Banda, he said the UPND would use Operation Watermelon, which the UPND has been really talking about, to create havoc, to create instability, and to ensure Zambia loses its territorial integrity because...
So, Peter, a watermelon is green outside and red inside. Now, incidentally, those are the colors of the leading political parties in this country. Green is for the PF, and red is for the UPND, my party. Hakainde Hichilema's political party, the guy who should be president next. Now, you see, the UPND is using Operation Watermelon for survival purposes. If you wear a UPND T-shirt openly, you will be attacked, and chances are you will be killed. We have lost our members because they had a UPND beret, they had a UPND T-shirt, or a UPND wraparound. So now we have told our members, hey, look, you can even wear PAF green. Wear PAF green, but inside your heart, you know that you are red. So that's Operation Watermelon. It's a survival tactic. It's got absolutely nothing to do with being violent.
Canisius Banda is the deputy leader of Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Thousands of Zimbabweans staged a peaceful march in Harare yesterday to express their dismay over the proposed introduction of bond notes. President Robert Mugabe's failure to address the deteriorating economic situation in the country and other issues affecting the nation. The protesters urged President Mugabe to step down, saying he has failed to run Zimbabwe. Reporter Patricia Mudadigwa reports from Harare.
Police descended heavily on the protesters who were waving some placards inscribed Mugabe must go and no to bond notes. Several protesters and journalists covering the event were injured when police attempted to disperse and arrest the marchers. The protesters were drawn from various organizations, including the opposition Transform Zimbabwe Party and several others. The demonstration was cleared by the courts yesterday after police tried to block it. Despite the heavy riot police presence, the demonstrators sang Andy Mugabe songs during the march and openly urged President Mugabe to step down. Riot police failed to disperse the demonstrators at their gathering point in the central business district. The demonstrators marched to the government complex, which houses the Minister of Finance, and handed a petition to senior state officials before the police used force to disperse the crowd heading for parliament, where unemployed graduates wanted to leave a second petition on lack of jobs. Ngari Vume, who took the police to court for refusing to sanction the demonstration, addressed the demonstrators at the Minister of Finance offices. He said Zimbabweans will not watch while a few individuals continue to take the country downhill.
Mangusha and Mugabe must resign because they failed to run the country. Let us continue the fight.
Ngari Vume and a few other demonstrators were allowed to get inside the Minister of Finance that was heavily guarded to hand over the petition. Acting Permanent Secretary in the Minister of Finance and Economic Development, Jine Chimwe Churu, received the petition and told the demonstrators that the minister, Patrick Chinamasa, would respond to their grievances.
We'll accept your petition and we'll hand it over to the Minister of Economic Development. And I believe that at an appropriate time, you respond to your petition.
A graduate and one of the hashtag This Gown campaign equated the bonus to tissue papers. Mugoronji said it was said that President Mugabe also failed to deal with corruption.
We do not want tissue paper. We're saying no to tissue paper. We're saying no to bond notes because it's just a way of them to steal more money. It's just a way to keep on robbing us.
One of the journalists, Chris Maowe, said police beat him up, though he indicated that he was not one of the demonstrators.
They just came from the turnoff to Parliament building. Then they started beating everybody who was there. I tried to show them my press card, but they couldn't hear any of it. They beat me up.
Most Zimbabweans are against the move, saying the government appears to be bringing back the local dollar through the back door. Reporting from Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
A state government commissioner in northern Nigeria says the army killed 348 members of a Shiite minority sect during an altercation in December last year. But the commission's report, released this week, has also sparked condemnation of the Shiite community in Nigeria. Chika Odua reports from Abuja.
An investigative commission set up by the Kaduna state government has found that the Nigerian army used excessive force against a Shiite minority sect over a roadside dispute 8 months ago. The commission says 348 civilians were killed, along with one soldier. International human rights groups have released similar findings. But the Kaduna State report also found fault with the sect, the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, something Army spokesman Colonel Sani Usman was quick to point out.
It's only one recommendation about the Nigerian army, but all subsequent were against the sect.
Usman declined to comment on that one recommendation, that the government identify the soldiers allegedly responsible for killing 348 civilians and bring them to justice. As for the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, the commission says the group has deliberately committed acts of lawlessness and defied the constitution. The report also accuses the group of radicalizing its members.
Yes, they really indicted us. That's what we are disputing, that why should they indict the movement? After all, they haven't heard from the side of the movement. And we believe the report is biased against us. Also, we believe we are aggrieved about it.
Ibrahim Musa is the spokesman of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria. The movement declined to participate in the judicial inquiry out of protest. The sect's leader, Cleric Ibrahim Zakzaki, has been held without charge since the clash on December 12. The IMN had blocked a major road in the northern city of Zaria to conduct a flag-hoisting ceremony at its headquarters. A military convoy was prevented from moving forward, and a heated altercation broke out. Since the report's release on Sunday, some local press have slammed the sect. The Shiites seem to enjoy confrontations with the state, wrote former presidential advisor Ruben Abati in one national paper. Another sought to draw parallels with Boko Haram. The movement has repeatedly come head-to-head with the Nigerian government. Members say a 2014 incident killed three of Zakzaki's sons.
It has been a long process plan that they have been planning against our leader for long.
Abubakar Zaki joined the movement in 1986. He teaches the Quran to young children. His son-in-law and one-year-old granddaughter were killed in the December skirmish, along with three of his students. The movement says 850 of its members are still missing after the December clash and are presumed dead. Their spokesman told VOA they may appeal the panel's findings. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Australia has been accused of condoning the severe abuse of refugees who have been deported to asylum processing centers on the tiny Pacific island of Nauru. Around 2,000 refugees were sent there after Australia struck a deal with the Nauruan government in 2012. Henry Richwell reports.
In a joint investigation, Amnesty and Human Rights Watch described the conditions for refugees on Nauru as inhuman and accused the Australian government of deliberately inflicting suffering on people seeking safety and freedom, seemingly designed to put off other refugees from trying to reach Australia by boat. Amnesty's Anna Neistat travelled to Nauru in July.
Attempted suicides and self-harm are daily routine on this island, and so far, the medical services, the service providers here, the immigration authorities have failed to do anything.
VOA spoke to one Iranian asylum seeker on Nauru via Skype, a big risk as mobile phones are banned in the camps. She asked to hide her identity.
In the camp, we're living in the tents and dirty tents, you know, and we got too many problems for breathing or something there, and like allergy and asthma. All people have problem, mental problem. I was stronger than my friends before, and now I'm got really crazy here.
Amnesty claims authorities are refusing to allow very sick refugees to leave the island for treatment in better facilities in Australia or Papua New Guinea. Healthcare on Nauru is provided by a private contractor called International Health and Medical Services, but the investigation found severe shortcomings. The report also accuses Nauru police of ignoring crimes against refugees. Many of them fear going out at night. There have been several attacks by local gangs.
They don't like refugees, you know. They hate us and they can't do anything with us. You know, sometimes they attack people and rape to girls or boys.
There is no advantage in paying a people smuggler to travel to Australia.
The Australian government released a film warning refugees arriving by boat that they faced deportation to Nauru in 2012. The country has launched a series of policies to deter asylum seekers. The government says it was not told of the allegations made by Amnesty and Human Rights Watch or shown any evidence before the report was published. Henry Richwell for VOA News, London.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. On the eve of President Obama's 55th birthday, he was greeted with a happy birthday song by about 1,000 participants at this year's Young African Leaders Summit in Washington. And that's it for this Thursday, August 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I'm James Butte, wishing all of you in Africa a good Thursday.
Next on Let's Talk, absentee parents, a serious issue that affects the lives of the children and parents alike all over the world. What are the reasons and consequences? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing absentee parents. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.